He went to a desk and drew forth a photograph of a small saucer flying over some trees and a building which he had taken on September 18, 1954. He explained that this was his fourth and latest experience with his extraterrestrial friend Alan. As saucer photographs go, it was not the best in the world by any means. But the circumstances under which it was taken are so unique that we think it is worthy of special note. The taking of it involved both an OSC and a physical experience. Daniel Fry was driving his car on Garvey Boulevard, east of Los Angeles, when he suddenly heard Alan's voice inside his head telling him that if he had a camera he would be able very shortly to photograph a flying saucer. He did not have a camera, but he spied a drugstore which he was then passing on the opposite side of the road. He made a quick U-turn on the boulevard, a minor miracle in itself considering the traffic, rushed into the drugstore, and hurriedly bought a little brownie holiday camera. He asked the proprietor to load it with film quickly as he wished to take some pictures of a flying saucer. One can well imagine what the proprietor thought. He resumed his trip toward his destination, and between the towns of Baldwin Park and Azusa, California, he spied the saucer. It hovered and tilted and practically posed for him while he took his pictures. Later he returned the film to the proprietor of the drugstore, told him they were the flying saucer pictures and asked if he would please develop them. "We include this picture in our book, a physical picture of a physical saucer, but taken as the result of an OSC message." Chapter 15. Our Visit with Mead Lane. By this time in our pilgrimage we had been awakened to a very startling thing, at least it is very startling to most people when they first begin to grasp it, namely that flying saucers are more than a mere physical manifestation. Fortunately for us this astonishing fact was not suddenly thrust upon us in the early stages of our investigation. If it had been, it is entirely possible that we too might have joined many others in quitting the whole thing as a silly waste of time, as fiction, or bunkum, or fakery, or dreams, or some such thing. As a matter of fact, the supraphysical aspect of saucers dawned upon us so gradually that we never even felt it as a shock, but rather as a logical, reasonable and even natural extension of human knowledge into higher dimensions of life. We quickly realized, however, that this supraphysical aspect of saucers was indeed unexplored territory. Most saucer enthusiasts were in blissful ignorance of the fact that there even existed any aspect beyond the physical. They were so excited about physical saucers that this phase alone was almost too much for them. But the people we most wanted to talk to were the more advanced researchers who had already put two and two together regarding the supraphysical aspects. One such researcher whom we especially wanted to meet was Mead Lane, a veteran of many years' experience in probing the secrets of the borderland that lies between the seen and unseen worlds. Surely he could help us to understand the unseen phases of spacecraft. In order to meet him we headed our car toward Southern California, and on April 29, 1955, we rolled into San Diego where he lives. Our speedometer showed that our saucer pilgrimage to date had now covered over 16,000 miles, replete with many wonderful experiences. Life to us had indeed become a thrilling adventure. 112. It was still early afternoon and we decided to go directly to Mead Lane's office. For years he has served as national director of what is called the Borderland Sciences Research Associates. This is a somewhat informally organized group of individuals living in many different localities which for a number of years, under Mead Lane's leadership, has been carrying on some exceptional research activities. Here is a representative group of curious people whose desire to investigate is uninhibited. The usual creeds, dogmas, theories and thought patterns of stiff orthodoxy mean nothing to them. They investigate and study almost every kind of phenomena in that borderland of science which lies between the physical and the higher manifestations of life. Their meat is the interesting facts, events and phenomena which orthodox science either cannot or will not investigate. A few brief examples of the subjects they have tackled are such things as strange appearances or disappearances, variations in gravity, underground races, teleportation, apportation, materialization, clairvoyance, clairaudience, the powers of Hunna, parapsychological phenomena, strange photographic phenomena, the auras of man, and many, many other similar subjects. Any associate can mail a report of his individual research to headquarters, where it is ably edited by Mr. Lane and often published in the BSRA periodical called The Round Robin. Fortunately, we found both Mr. Lane and his wife at home in the BSRA headquarters. They welcomed us as fellow researchers. We soon discovered that both of them had been to Mexico, and Mr. Lane could do an excellent job of speaking Spanish. The Mexican saucer situation was of great interest to them, and we discussed it at some length. We noted that a room was filled with many rare books on borderland subjects which are yet too little understood by man to be classed as science, yet too important to be neglected. We could have spent hours browsing, but as it was, Mr. Lane loaded us up with enough fascinating books to keep us busy for weeks. The breadth and grasp of his brilliant mind, his vast knowledge of borderland things far beyond the level of the average human awareness, his keen sense of humor and his graciousness in sharing his investigations with others, all this combined made our visits a never-to-be-forgotten privilege. We say visits, because during the months we spent in San Diego we found ourselves returning many times to sit at the feet of this great researcher and to listen to his wisdom. We are very grateful for the benefit of his experience in understanding the more advanced phases of the peculiar phenomena now appearing in our skies. At one time he showed us an auroscope, an instrument which he and his associates have used to explore the aura or emanations of energy which surround the physical bodies of all living things. This proved to be a rather simple-looking instrument consisting of a metal handle from which protruded a shiny metal wire. The wire came from the handle straight to start with, then went into a helix, and then straight again, ending in a peculiar tubular tip. It was like a metal divining rod or dowsing wand. I immediately tried it out on Helen. It worked. The tip of the instrument deflected away from her as much as 45 degrees. Heavens! What an aura she had, believe it or not. She even had wings protruding from her back. I found myself wondering what a human being would really look like if anyone could see all of him, the seen and the unseen portions. Helen insisted on trying the instrument on me, but I strenuously demurred. I was afraid she might discover some horns protruding from my skull, or at least something not so flattering as wings. We also tried out Mead Lane's Kilner goggles, marked with the label of the London Psychic Educational Centre, London, England. They are intended, as we understand it, to help develop auric vision. To us they made everything look a peculiar shade of red. Mr. Lane also showed us something of especial interest, to saucer students, a substance which has been called angel's hair. It was a name given to the mysterious white and often matted hair-like substance which has sometimes fallen out of the sky and descended onto trees, telegraph wires, etc. It has been associated with the presence of flying saucers. It has a way of evaporating when held too long in the hand. Later we found out what the spaceships use it for, see Chapter 18, Q. 22. We had numerous discussions with Mead Lane on the superphysical aspects of flying saucers and allied subjects, and may we say that he and many of his associates, from their years of experience in borderland researches, have not been fooled by the glib and pat explanations with which orthodox scientists and entrenched officialdom have essayed to explain away and whitewash the entire saucer phenomena. They know from experience that the human mind of man will go to any lengths to rationalize in terms of natural phenomena that which it is incapable of understanding. Failing in this, it will deny the facts and do everything it can to discredit those who are having saucer experiences. This is exactly what has happened. The human mind is very jealous of its three-dimension ignorance. This free-thinking research group has been quick to discern the superphysical aspect of the phenomena being reported and the fact that it can neither be explained nor explained away by a purely physical approach. Therefore, they have lost no time in investigating it from higher points of view. After all, this is the type of thing in which they are both interested and experienced. It seems to us almost incredible that any serious-minded researcher could overlook the noteworthy contributions of this veteran researcher and his group in this field of endeavor. In our humble opinion, their early work on the superphysical aspects of saucers is outstanding and will be so recognized in due course of time. Parts of this research are set forth in Meadlane's book Flying Discs, The Ethership Mystery and Its Solution, issued from BSIRA headquarters in 1950, and The Coming of the Guardians, issued in 1954. The latter represents a work which he produced with the assistance of Mark Propert's Inner Circle. Not too many saucer enthusiasts we have met are familiar with these researches. What a pity, or maybe it is not a pity, because possibly they are just a little too advanced for the average fan. We have all learned that the higher aspects of saucers are not within the range of many people's interests or their capacity to grasp the reality of things beyond the boundaries of the five physical senses. As a great master scientist once remarked some 2,000 years ago, "I have yet many things to say unto you, but ye cannot bear them now." In our thought, the great pioneer sorcerers are helping to bring to present day humanity some of these things. Many cannot yet bear them, but there are also thousands who are ready to listen. It is for those important few that the pioneers labor. Because part of Meadlane's research had been in connection with Mark Probert's Inner Circle, we resolved that Mark Probert would be the next stop on our flying saucer pilgrimage. Chapter 16. The Hour of Decision. To this point in our pilgrimage, before taking any further steps, there are valid reasons for our pausing for an hour of decision. We reached this point ourselves, and wish now to extend this consideration to our readers. You see, we have had plenty of experience with those who reach a certain point and then retreat. For example, a friend of ours became interested in saucers and really went into the subject. We met him later and asked how he was getting along, and he replied, "Well, studying saucers was fine as long as they were physical. But there came a time when implications set in. To tell the truth, I almost died of the implications." We have seen many good people fold up when they come to the implications. At first they were all agog with saucer enthusiasm. Then some of the truth of the implications began to dawn on them, and they just couldn't take it. Suddenly they wanted to give the saucers back to the Venusians and wash their hands of them forever. The implications dealt too severe a blow to their smug little view of life. The superphysical aspects were too much for them. It takes a certain endowment of the pioneer spirit to pursue the saucers to their lairs and fearlessly appraise the implications. A brilliant young engineer became enthusiastically interested in the subject of saucers. He read all the literature, attended lectures, joined a saucer group. Then all of a sudden he became stone cold on the subject. He would not open his mouth about it. He developed a kind of furtive glance over his shoulder. He would not be seen dead with anybody who had saucer experiences or was interested or active in this research. This was such an interesting case that we persevered until we found the true answer. What do you think it turned out to be? His employer had found out about his saucer interest and dropped broad hints that it wasn't good for business. He became fearful of losing his job and therefore quit all saucer activity. It looks as if in our free world some of the saucer pioneers who really want to learn may have to go underground. In fact, many of them have. We found that there exists today a worldwide saucer underground, an huge underground, a fraternity of those who know, some of them instinctively, that great changes are due in this world and that help from on high is a solid actuality at this time. It is easier for many who are interested in saucers to meet in private. Then they do not have to face the scorn, ridicule and even persecution of this world. There is the case of the Mexican chauffeur Salvador Villanueva Medina, who sat up most of the night with two men from outer space. He did not tell his story to the public until many months after it happened. Why? Because of fear. Fear of ridicule, fear of being thought insane or at least peculiar or unreliable, fear of his job. Then there was an exceptionally fine young man in a government position. He was a sincere researcher and joined Ed with others in a research effort. Suddenly he too quit. He privately told us he was afraid for his job and his career. He found out that to his superiors the space people were, to say the least, persone non grati. Another enthusiastic sorcerer belonged to a religious group. He was doing fine until the hierarchy of the group expressed severe objections. He not only quit his sorceracitivity but began to point the finger of condemnation toward all sorcerer investigators. If this shocks you a bit, just remember that the subject of sorcerers at the present time is not respectable. No, not even that of physical sorcerers. They will be in time, but right now they are not a part of tradition or of eminent conservative respectability in the fields of education, astronomy, science, engineering, religion or government. Sorcerers are so far out in front of conventional concepts that the pioneers are in an exposed position. Everyone can take a crack at them with the impunity of time-honored knowledge. It takes courage to be a sorcerer. It takes courage to be interested in sorcerers. But it takes more courage to follow the supraphysical aspects. The situation is not much different in a way than that which existed in the time of Christopher Columbus. All of the organized, conservative and eminently respectable scientific and philosophical thought of the day was against, what? It was against the cosmic truth that the Earth was round and that great unexplored continents existed. It was against anything in advance of the prevailing conventional and limited view of life in that day and age. The world was flat, everybody could see it was flat. If you sailed off the edge of the flatness, you would fall into oblivion. Prevailing science and officialdom was against and looked askance at any proponent of a different view. As we see it, the sorcerers of today are nothing more and nothing less than the rugged Columbuses of our time. With this noteworthy exception, that while Columbus was calling attention merely to a round world and possibly a new continent or two, the sorcerers of today are calling attention to entire inhabited planets, solar systems, and life and civilizations in outer space. No wonder conventional thought is arrayed against them. At present, these modern pioneers are putting up with much ridicule because they believe they are right. It seems increasingly evident that eventually it will be the hidebound conventionalists, the educated ignorant, who will be driven from their seats of knowledge of things that are not so. We feel certain that their egotism is eventually going to experience a terrible deflation process, and they are not going to like it. Very few of our present isms and ologies are going to stand up under the impact of unfolding cosmic truth. It is going to take its toll of some of our most time, honored and sacred beliefs, whether they are called science, astronomy, religion, philosophy, psychology, metaphysics, medicine, or what not. Few branches of human learning are going to come through this unfoldment of truth unscathed or unchastised. We pride ourselves on our great civilization. Every civilization prides itself on being the greatest. The human ego knows no bounds. May we state that if we could see ourselves as the spaceman seers, our egotism would be flattened to a minus quantity. They tell us they, not we, have records of Earth civilizations going back billions of years, right back to the starting vortex that formed the Earth. They have records of civilizations on this Earth that knew how to overcome gravity, how to travel in space without burning fuels, and how to tap sources of energy and make energy applications that we are only now beginning to relearn. Thus it is that when these modern pioneer sorcerers begin to call our attention to these advanced things, we on Earth resist the truth. This is no laughing matter. How are we ever going to learn if governments suppress the facts, business institutions fire their employees who become interested, religious groups say it is the work of the devil, and the public regards all pioneer sorcerers as crackpots? When we found out that flying saucers led us right out of this world, we ourselves had to face a decision, whether to follow them into supraphysical realms or retreat to the physical. We decided to go ahead. But we cannot make this decision for you. Each one must decide for himself. You see, the truth which we were seeking turned out to be much bigger than we ever expected. Do not get the idea for one moment that we have learned all of the truth, not by any means. In fact, we have learned how little we know. Maybe that is the beginning of wisdom. But we feel we have learned something about this great subject, something about the sorcerers, the flying discs and the beings who operate them, and about the regions of outer space from which they come. But we realize that we have learned many of these things for ourselves. How can one learn something for someone else? That is our problem. Moreover, some of these things we have learned have come from sources which some of our readers may not wish to accept. We have reached a point where cosmic receptivity is the main factor. A wise man once said, "You can never teach another anything. All you can do is hold a cosmic truth before his consciousness, and if he is ready, something from within him will respond to that truth." Learning comes, not from without, but from within. Thus far we have acted as reporters and have reported things and events objectively as we saw them. Now we are about to go into the higher phases of space phenomena and to use higher sources of information. We are going to deal more with cosmic concepts than objective events. Therefore, in this second phase of our pilgrimage, as we turn to the superphysical aspects of sources rather than the physical, we shall continue to report our experiences just as they were and not pull any punches. In the remainder of this book, to use some forceful American vernacular, we are going to lay it on the line. Some of you will go with us into the higher reaches of our subject, others will not. We have now come to a point where we realize that flying saucers themselves per se are no longer of prime importance. Certainly we would all like to take a ride in one. It would be a thrilling experience. But now it is not physical sources that are the important thing but what lies behind the physical aspects. From now on we are not even particularly concerned with physical proofs. You see, we are going to study OSC outer space communication, and messages being received, and we are going to give due weight to them in building our picture of outer space. We are going to listen and let beings who live in higher dimensions of life tell us what flying saucers are. After all, they ought to know more about them than we do. We are going to study many things which are of intense interest. It is not that the cosmic truth is either terrible or terrifying. That depends on our viewpoint. We think it is magnificent and glorious beyond all human conceptions. But it is different, very different, from ordinary human concepts. It is this difference which causes some people to run away from cosmic truth. The fear of the unknown engulfs them. How are we going to learn cosmic truth? Just the way every new worthwhile phase of truth has come to mankind in the past, the hard way, through pioneers. We are going to learn through the sturdy pioneers, the sorcerers, those with enough intestinal fortitude to face ridicule, scorn, loss of jobs, scientific and religious ignorance, and to stick to their guns and eventually give painful but glorious birth to a new wisdom and a new age. If we but realized it, the advent of flying saucers and the opportunity of learning about them is a wonderful way to learn cosmic truth. The sorcerers are an outstanding aid to present-day cosmic education. Some people, when they begin to glimpse the stupendous picture of inhabited outer space, feel very uncomfortable. This is perfectly understandable. They wish to wrap their beloved physical robes about themselves more closely and hurry back into the more familiar and congenial scenes of three-dimensional life. Let no one blame them. Let each of us respect each other's views, even though it means a parting of ways. New Age students will understand that this parting of the ways which is now going on all over the world is a very deep thing in itself and one which carries with it a tinge of cosmic sadness. For those of you who are still with us, we are going to tilt the lid on some of the deep cosmic aspects of flying saucers. To do this we are actually going to use both physical and OSC information. Why not? It is a New Age dispensation, is it not? It is pouring to Earth through many channels, is it not? We are New Age individuals, are we not? It is here for us to use, and it would not be intelligent to disregard it. So we propose to utilize all New Age sources of information, both physical sources and OSC sources, and consider each bit of information as an important little piece of an enormous crossword puzzle. We will analyze, sift and coordinate this information, and then we will endeavor to fit all of the little pieces together into a gigantic whole, and then take a look at it. This will represent our new age panoramic view of outer space and they that dwell therein. So, let's get on with the most exciting part of our pilgrimage. Chapter 17. Mark Probert and the Inner Circle. We now invite those who did not desert our pilgrimage, after they learned of our intention to utilize unconventional sources of information and probe the supraphysical aspects of flying saucers, to accompany us on our next adventure, that of becoming well acquainted with Mark Probert and his inner circle. Mark Probert is the famous and respected sensitive of San Diego, California, whom Mead Lane worked with in bringing forth the remarkable book The Coming of the Guardians. It is a veritable treasure house for the more advanced researcher who is not afraid of tackling the higher aspects of outer space. In fact, Mark Probert and his inner circle present an outstanding phenomenon all by themselves, even if there were no such things as flying saucers. We have talked many times of OSC Outer Space Communication, and we have already given the reader a few examples of certain types. Now we are going to tell you about another interesting variation of OSC typified by that extraordinary individual Mark Probert. We are even going farther than that. We are going to show you exactly what happened when we asked his inner circle of teachers, living in a higher phase of life, to answer some specific questions on flying saucers. We are going to show you what these OSC messages are like. But let us not get ahead of ourselves. First, let us meet the Proberts and get acquainted with their interesting history. Knowing that they travel extensively and are often away from home, we felt ourselves fortunate indeed when we discovered that they were in town. We were not strangers because we had met Mark and his wife Irene once before, but very briefly, in Detroit, Michigan. Mark and Irene Probert are very friendly people. They remembered us and extended a warm welcome. There is a very human side to the Proberts, and we were privileged to find this out through many weeks of close association during our extended stay in San Diego. We accompanied them on some of their lecture tours. It is not our intention to tell the detailed story of this amazing phenomenon of the Proberts. It would take volumes to do it justice, and we hope that someday the true, full story will be made public. It is an Arabian Nights story in everyday life, if ever there was one. We do feel, however, that a few background notes are pertinent to show the nature of this type of OSC outer space communication. First, let us trace briefly the development of Mark Probert's extraordinary OSC abilities so the reader will understand that such things are often a growth and not just a sudden development. The external manifestation of his abilities commenced back in 1943, shortly after Mark and Irene Probert were married. We have received permission to tell a few rather personal things which happened shortly thereafter. What happened was that Mark Probert started talking in his sleep. It was not just a little talk. It was a lot of talk, and it persisted and persisted. This would ordinarily be disturbing enough in any marriage, but that was not the half of it. He was doing a lot of talking, but in strange languages which Irene Probert could not understand. The situation reached such a pass that Mark was finally moved into a special room where two men friends who could speak seven different languages between them were able to keep watch and listen. In this manner they were able definitely to identify such languages as Italian, Portuguese, Spanish, German and French, some of them spoken very fluently by Mark during sound sleep. When he awakened he would remember nothing about it. In his sleep he would thus speak of politics, historical events, personal experiences, strange people and places, and even recite poetry in foreign tongues which he has never studied or been at all familiar with in his waking life. However, some of the languages still defied identification. In time, with the help of an expert on ancient and forgotten tongues, Chinese, Mongolian, Sanskrit and Hindustani dialects were added as further encores to Mark Probert's amazing unconscious repertoire of languages. Finally, Mead Lane and a group of scientific researchers became interested in Mark Probert and started an orderly and scientific program of investigation and development which lasted over 8 years. We shall briefly recount a few of the developments which followed as given to us by Mark Probert himself. The first thing they discovered was that Mark was a sensitive of extraordinary natural abilities, a veritable cosmic telephone. He could transmit messages from certain beings in other planes of life whether he was asleep or awake. He was both clairaudient and to a lesser extent clairvoyant.